Welcome to The Colorcast, a show about color grading, color science, and post-production. I'm Jason Myris, a colorist in Los Angeles. In today's episode, Josh is hosting his first ever Coloristos 101 in an interview with LA-based DIT Duck Grossberg. Duck has been involved with on-set color and data management since the first Red One cameras appeared on set several years ago. He and Josh discuss the current state of being a DIT, his favorite cameras to work with, and what he thinks the future holds for DITs going forward. So with that, let's get started with Josh's Coloristos 101 with Duck Grossberg.
Today I am talking with Duck Grossberg. He's been a DIT on such films as Real Steel, Life of Pi, and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. He's also worked in TV on Ravenswood and Gotham. He's even done some grading on the Oculus Rift. Me and Duck go back. We first met 15 years ago when we both worked at Modern Video Film. Thanks for talking with us, Duck.
It's my pleasure.
So how did you get started as a DIT?
Kind of accidental. I have a long background in computer science and post-production, and I've worked for some, you know, big post houses, Modern Video Film and Deluxe and the Post Group. My DIT work started kind of accidentally at the Post Group. We were doing a series for the Academy called Apples to Apples, where we would do shootouts of various digital cameras and film cameras and then do an intense grading session on them. Then we would have an event with the Academy where we would play back all of the information and try to make people decipher which camera was which camera. And the year that the Red camera was released, working as a data manager and engineer at the Post Group, they had me go on the entire shoot. And I just kind of fell in love with set life. For many years, I was always trying to find a way to get back on set. And working on Real Steel, I went out as an engineer supporting the colorist, the on-set colorist. They didn't quite have a DIT. It was still somewhat of a new thing, and we had like a really bitchin' video engineer as well, and there were some problems with the color, and one of the gentlemen who was doing the on-set color, he was let go, and the producers decided, hey, Duck's here, you're the colorist now, go. And then that's when I really kind of fell into a trial by flame.
Yeah, in those early days of Red too, there was a lot of trying to figure that stuff out. Were you using a Scratch or anything like that from the beginning, or was it something else?
No, this was pre that. I mean, this was early on. We had, it was camera number like 6 or 9. I can't remember the exact number. I mean, it was really early. There was a gentleman who, I believe he was the owner of the camera. His name was Blair. And I want to say it was Blair Paulson, but I can't remember for sure. It's been a long time. And me and him were kind of poking it with sticks and using the Redline command interface, and then I ended up bringing a lot of things into the Clipster, really just tweaking it. I had no idea what I was doing. It was bananas.
Well, nobody knew what they were doing at that point anyway. It was all brand new. I mean, you were shooting Red out with film, so I mean, that's got to be going back 10 years ago, 12 years ago.
Yeah, it was in like 2005 or 6 or 7. It's a blur. But yeah, I mean, we shot it against like a Genesis, maybe even, I can't remember, but I think there might have been one of the earlier D21s involved. It was a neat shoot. It was with Bill Bennett, who's an amazing director of photography who really does amazing work with car commercials.
Right. So did you feel like you had to defend this digital? I mean, this is when, you know, you're shooting out against film as well. So did you feel like, look, this is the future, this is the way we should be doing things? And they're like, no, we need to keep doing film. Or was it different than that?
It was different. It was kind of a mixed bag. Film was still very much king. And we were just making the inroads in. Like, we were starting to see, I had put together some P2 workflows using the HVX 200 for the House MD show, for CSI Las Vegas, and for another show or two. We were just kind of exploring mixing digital with film. So it was still pretty early on, and everyone expected the digital to just blow up. And surprisingly, everyone was really impressed with the Red, but being such a brand new camera, there were some technical problems. The gentleman who was at the time the owner and creator of Red actually came to set and took the camera away from us and threatened the camera operator because he thought that they were really trying to destroy his camera and bring a lot of bad press. It was a big misunderstanding, and it turned into a giant fiasco on the CML.
That's interesting, though. Yeah, so, I mean, since you've been around this stuff from the beginning, how do you feel like things have changed, and where do you see things going in the future?
That's a really good question. Things are changing rapidly. The one thing I see in the future, at least in my future, is less and less DIT work. I find that the DIT role is being rapidly replaced by like a DMT, like a media manager or someone who's just more focusing on just transferring data and securing data. And a lot of the color work and a lot of the traditional DIT work, which is kind of unfortunate, is moving into a lab. A lot of times I'm working in a camera truck, or I'm working in editorial, or I'm at a hotel room, and you're not really involved with the camera anymore, which is really scary. And you're just primarily focusing on color and dailies. So I think that some type of hybrid position is going to happen, or the DIT position is going to kind of go the way of the dinosaur.
So do you think that that's majorly like a budget decision, or do you think that that's just the technology catching up?
I think it's kind of a mix between budget and culture. A lot of times they don't want to pay the price, because DIT is an expensive member of the Camera Guild. It is it's a highly skilled and a highly paid position that unfortunately has been misunderstood and misused so many times that I think a lot of producers and a lot of director of photographies feel that the DIT hurts them. And it's unfortunate, because a great DIT, and a lot of DPs realize this, is the right-hand man to the DP. He's your extra set of eyes and ears. He's helping you design the look. And he or she is fixing the camera when there's problems. And it's a pretty important role.
Yeah, it's really ironic, too, because if you think about it, that's their one opportunity, if they can't make it to the DI, to set those looks that they want to do, or check in on the footage and see how it is. If it's just a wrangler, they're not really looking at it as a standard daily session, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then it really becomes devalued. And it's kind of funny, in television, which is kind of a new thing for me, and I've been living in the TV world for the last year or so, it's arguably the most critical dailies. You have the most stakeholders watching your dailies. You have the most people involved, and they're living and breathing by that episode and that week. And that seems to be the one area where there's rarely a DIT. Maybe the pilot, a lot of the times, will get a DIT, but when a show goes to series, you might have 12 or 14 episodes with no DIT or no type of on-set color.
Well, that's dangerous at the very least, right?
Yeah, I mean, there is the argument a lot of people make that dailies color doesn't matter, we're going to throw it away and we're going to do everything different than DI, which I think is crazy. And I think anyone that's really worked through the chain, or anyone that's really invested in a project, really understands the value of having a solid on-set colorist and being able to start creating the look and getting into the mindset and being able to use your colorist as a storyteller from day one and finding out what works and doesn't work.
Right. You're probably seeing a lot of different types of cameras used together in a show. Do you ever have to show those cameras back to back to prove to people, say, here's how this camera will match with this camera, here's how we'll cut together? And, you know, without that on set, they won't be able to see anything like that.
No, I think it's kind of the opposite. I think it's more of course this will work. This is my Blackmagic Pocket Cinema camera. This is my A7. This is a GoPro. I'm just going to use it because this is the right tool for now, and they'll make it work in post.
Right. So you're primarily using, just to get back to the tech side of this too, is you're using a color front on for your dailies processing.
Yeah, I'm using Onset Dailies, the 2015 version right now.
There's a lot of other competing products, you know, obviously Blackmagic has their solution, FilmLight has their solution. What is it about the color front that made you decide to use that on set?
I think a big part of it was the company that I'm working for right now, Modern Video Film. They own over a dozen licenses of color front. They're heavily invested in color front, and that's a big part of their workflow. Before I was using color front, on my personal kit, I had Resolve and Scratch. And once I started using color front, I went out, even as an independent owner-operator of my own gear, I went out and bought a license of ColorFront, because it truly is, hands down, the best of class, most magical tool I've ever seen for dailies.
Wow, that's great. So even if you know that you're going to go back to another Resolve, or if you're going to go to a base light or something like that, you'd still choose a ColorFront over those?
Yeah, I would for dailies. It's not a finishing tool.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's got a lot of cool features on the finishing end. It does some incredible things. It does things that even a Clipster can't do. Or I should say it does even some things that a Clipster does, but a little bit better and faster. But it's at the moment, it's primarily a dailies and like a VFX processing tool. It's definitely not a finishing tool.
Right. So, since you're on set and you're seeing you're on TV, you're in film, you're doing all kinds of different shows. Is there any camera that you've noticed lately that is the standout, most interesting, best look camera that you've seen lately?
Hands down, period, amen, it's the Alexa family.
Oh, right. So Alexa and the Amira.
Yeah, I haven't processed anything on the Amira yet. I've heard really good things, but in general, the Alexa family and the F55 are my two favorite cameras as a colorist.
Right. And so your least favorite then on that side would have to be?
Probably a lot of the prosumer end stuff, like okay. The A7, GoPro, 5D, all solid tools, but just a little wonky and they all have their own funkiness.
So back to when you worked on Real Steel. So what was your process for setting the looks when you worked on set with that?
That was a tough one. I mean, I think for all intents and purposes, at that particular time, I had no business being an on-set colorist. And being thrown onto a giant film with Mauro Fiore, who had just come off winning the cinematography award from the Academy, the Oscar, for Avatar, it was a little harrowing. And the big thing that I had to deal with immediately was he's got a very pronounced eye, and he does not like magenta. So, and trying to really figure out slope, offset, and power on the fly, things looked very magenta a lot of the time. And he had this kind of stylized, vivid green and cyan, like intense kind of future look. It was really difficult. I had a really good crew working with me, and I'd be on walkie sometimes with some of the operators that were on set, and they'd be looking at the concept art in Video Village, and they would be looking at the DP's monitor, and we'd go off onto a side channel, and they'd be like, okay, Doug, it looks kind of like the concept art, but you need to, I don't know how exactly to explain it, but it's too yellow. Does that make sense?
That's definitely a trial by fire. What's the big difference between working in movies and TV?
I think the overall culture. A lot of the times I've been really fortunate that I'm working on really big shows where we do have a lot of experienced people who work from features, but everything's a lot faster and it's a lot more compressed when you're on a television schedule than you are on a film schedule. So, instead of having 6 to 9 months to post, you might have 8 weeks before, in between the start of the show and the end of shooting of that show. So it gets chaotic and everyone wants everything now and they need it now and they're trying to get visual effects finalized. And you don't have the budgets also. TV budgets seem to be shrinking. So you don't have the amenities that you have on a feature film.
So you're generally, the way that you've been brought up too, is you've worked in post. So going into a production environment is a complete culture shock as well.
Yeah, it is. And I'll tell you, the several shows that I've been on set for have just been a tremendously awesome experience, because one of the things I can do is, and especially being a member of 600 of the IATSE Guild, the Cinematographers Guild, I'm allowed to touch the cameras. I'm part of set. I'm with everyone. I can notice little things and be like, hey, if we just do this right now, we're going to save the editors so many headaches and they're going to love us and they're going to praise us. Let's just change this one thing. And they're very receptive to it, because a lot of times, even the most talented camera operators and assists, they have no idea what's happening behind the scenes. They're wizards and amazing people, and we wouldn't have anything to do in post without them. But it's just, it's a different process.
When you're actually working with post as well, are you still, you said you're processing for DNX HD for Avid. Are you doing any Final Cut still, or is that still?
Yeah, it's been many, many years since I've done anything on Final Cut other than, say, hey, what is this X thing? Let me learn some of this and cut some of my kids' videos on it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like Avid is still king in feature and on television, and Premiere is starting to really pop up and get a foothold, and there are some huge, like, summer tentpole blockbusters gearing up right now that have Premiere workflows.
in terms of the stuff that you do, is it any easier to do anything for Premiere than it is Avid, or is it just about the same?
No, it's all. I think it's all pretty much the same, because whether I'm taking an ALE and I'm linking some media up via that, or I'm exporting an XML and I'm linking up media, and it's kind of a weird thing though, because I'm working in a lab a lot of the times. And in TV, I think they just, maybe the editorial staff doesn't always necessarily have as much experience as a feature editorial team. I find myself doing more and more edit assist work. Like on the last several jobs, once I've done the color grading, the basic media management, when I do all of my renders, I'm now building Avid projects. I'm sub-clipping, I'm adding metadata, I'm doing, I think, the primary work of a second assistant editor, maybe, and even some of the work of a first assistant editor, and they're starting to get used to that, and they get really upset if they have to do a lot of that themselves.
Yeah, I mean, as a DIT, you are really like a utility infielder. You got to know camera, you have to know post, you have to know deliveries and dailies and all of that stuff as well. So we met a while ago, and we were talking about the Oculus Rift, and you had mentioned that you did you colored a little bit of material for the Oculus Rift. So what was your experience with that? I guess if you could explain what the Oculus Rift is, if people don't know what that is.
Yeah, it's a really bitchin' piece of technology. The Oculus Rift is a virtual reality headset. So basically, it's a funky pair of goggles with two screens inside of it that you put on your head, you know, a la Lawnmower Man, but with photorealism, not funky 1980s blocky graphics. And it's a fully immersive platform that lets you play video games and watch content on. And it has head tracking with it. So what it is as you're looking at something, it's got almost a 360 field of vision. And as you move your head up and down and left and right, you're panning through. It's like being in a giant, like the Cinerama Dome, but even a more grander experience, like something you would see at Disneyland or the World Fair or something like that, but in your face. So it's just a really immersive platform to be able to get media-rich applications through. And I was really fortunate that there was a piece and a film that premiered at the New York Comic Con last year, and it was the very first build of Scratch that supported the Oculus VR, and Lucas Wilson, who's a pioneer in VR workflows, and he called me as a favor and asked me to come down and do a color grading session for him, and it was one of the coolest things I've ever done. Literally wearing a goggle where I could look up and down, I could look at the sky, I could look at the ground, I could look to the left, to the right, and be able to grade it while moving my head around and looking at everything was a funky experience.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty much, as you were saying before, your grading monitor was the actual goggles.
I think we're going to see it change, and it's going to be more of a traditional thing where you do grade into the right color space. But it is a weird scenario, because you've got arguably what's going to be an identical color space and identical viewing experience for every user, because the one platform that you're viewing it on is the headset itself. So I imagine something like the Oculus Rift doesn't lend itself to traditional outlets. Like, it's not something that you would have to make three or four different versions of, because it's very much geared towards this particular device.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be an amazing future. With that, then, I'm going to say thanks for talking to us. Is there anywhere people can contact you, or?
Yeah, I'm kind of all over the place. Like, right now, I'm in a hotel room in Croatia. I never know where I'm going to be and for how long. Yeah, if anyone wants to reach out to me, I've got my LinkedIn profile is Duck Grossberg. I think it's all one word, or it's just my name. You can look me up there, and I very rarely use it except to enter contests, but occasionally I throw out a tweet or two, and that's at Duck Grossberg. If anybody out there wants some serious entertainment, not color related, I definitely recommend, I'm listening to a podcast right now called The Worst Idea of All Time, and it's two Kiwis who are watching Grown Ups 2 every week for 52 weeks and reviewing it, and it's been my sanity here in Croatia.
You should also mention that you were on the crew of Grown Ups 2 as well.
Yes, I was on the crew of Grown Ups 2.
Well, cool. Thanks again for talking to us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Take care.